talk to this guy. I'm not going to waste any time. Let me get right at it. If you're on hold, stay there. If not, call 1-800-636-8686. We are joined right now by a columnist for Yahoo Sports. He is a New York Times bestselling author, author of the Epic Athletes book series, an EP on the Aaron Hernandez doc on Netflix, Killer Inside, co-host of the College Football Inquirer podcast. He is Dan Wetzel. Dan, what's going on? How are you?
I'm good, Jim. How are you?
Good, dude. Good. Thanks so much for doing it. Lots to cover, so let me jump in. The Rose Bowl, Dan, is finally on board with the college football playoff. The sport will officially expand to 12 teams for the playoff in 2024. Now that this has finally happened, what is your reaction?
I think it's great. I think it's great for the sport. If you take this weekend, if this was 2 years from now, we're going into a weekend where, you know, maybe only tonight's game, USC and Utah, actually matters. And who wins that game. And you can make the case that USC should be in regardless, whether even if they lose, because Ohio State's not even playing. Alabama's not even playing. You go into this weekend, every one of these games this weekend will matter for seeding, for getting a bye, for teams trying to still get into the back end of the thing. Like the Tulane UCF game would be for a spot in the playoff, and a potential like game at Ohio State would be like the biggest moment in either program's history. That would matter. Like, this entire weekend would be so much more exciting. And then we'd pop a couple weeks early and we would have home playoff games at, if the standing stuck right now, Ohio Stadium, Knoxville, Tuscaloosa, and Penn State. Four of the six or seven biggest stadiums in the country, six or seven of the most iconic things, would host playoff games in a few weeks. And then the winners would go on. And eventually they should extend these home fields. But you add all of that and the chase to get into that top 12, you just have so many meaningful games where, you know, you go into a weekend like this and you're like, all right, college football, we're all pumped. And it's like, yeah, Michigan can lose, Georgia can lose, TCU could probably lose. And you're like, what are we watching? So the whole thing is going to be better and more exciting. It took a long, long time to get here, but college football moves slow, but it's finally made a lot of progress.
Dan Wetzel joining us. Fact of the matter is, it's an incredible thing. It's an awesome thing. It's a thing that should have happened a long time ago. It's a thing that you had to wonder if it was ever going to happen. And one more thought about that. You have a great column up about this, but you want to talk about set in your ways. I mean, the powers that be regarding the Rose Bowl refused to even move their TV window up a single hour to accommodate anybody or anything else. For those who do not know why, what was their reason for refusing to move even an hour?
Well, the Rose Bowl was set on, the Rose Bowl's always had this exclusive television window on New Year's Day, and it's extremely valuable, obviously, because people want to watch college football that day. And they like having the sunset over the San Gabriel Mountains right at the start of the fourth quarter. And because of that, they want to start their game at 2 p.m. in L.A., 5 p.m. in the East Coast. And even if they would move that thing to 4 p.m., this was one proposal at one point, and they could put semifinals at like 12:30 and 8 and kind of go around the Rose Bowl. I would have given the Rose Bowl a semifinal every time, but regardless – They're like, no, we want that sunset to hit right at the end of the third quarter. It's perfect. And it kind of is, but it was holding up. And you tell people for years, there's the sunset in L.A. on Pasadena on the 1st of January is holding up this sport. It's one of the things holding up this sport. And no one would believe you, but it was true. They finally got the Rose Bowl to say, look, we're going to have to bend. And we're going to have to play ball with everybody else. And that was the final hurdle to get this playoff going. But yeah, they were hung up on their sunset. The big thing that changed though, SoFi Stadium. You build that thing and you say, hey, we love you, Rose Bowl. We don't need you. We got a $6 billion stadium right down the road that's actually better for us to stage big games in because of all the luxury boxes and all the parking and all the accessibility. So Rose Bowl had its run, but it's no longer anything special.
It's incredible. And it's all true, by the way. That might not be the only reason, but that is a reason. And we know that they were never, ever going to change. until they built that $5 billion edifice that's incredible and sparkling right up the way. And then they had a hammer, and then they had to get on board. But it really is funny, and it's true. Dan Wetzel is joining us. Dan, you touched on this about how USC is going to play and shouldn't have to win, but might have to win. Lay this out. You've made the point before. It seems kind of self-explanatory, but if nobody is able to play their way in this year, is there a reason why anybody should be possibly in danger of playing their way out? In other words, should USC have to win the Pac-12 title to get in the playoff or stay in the playoff?
They should not. And this is a logic-based and like intellectually sound argument, which I know is dangerous when discussing college football. But the committee has decided after 12 games that USC is more deserving of a playoff spot than Ohio State. They have made that determination. They voted on Tuesday, and they put out the thing. Ohio State does not play this weekend. Neither does Alabama, Tennessee, or Penn State. That's teams 5, 6, 7, and 8. 1, 2, 3, 4 do play, including number 4, USC. If you've determined after 12 games that USC is superior to Ohio State, then you can't sit there and say, now I'm going to ask you, USC, and you alone, to go prove it again. And you risk losing, but Ohio State risks nothing and just sits around. It's like somebody wins the marathon, and then you say, hey, I need you to run 3 more miles while the other guy sits here. And if we don't like the way you run the next 3 miles, then we're going to declare the guy you just beat to be the champion. It doesn't make any sense. It just is a pure logic thing. If after 12 games, some teams season is over and they can't play their way in, then you shouldn't have to do the unfair and unique burden of playing a 13th game. So USC should be in this thing. Now, logic will not, I don't believe this argument will carry any weight with the committee, because I don't think they comprehend it, think about it, and they just kind of get wrapped up in all the bit. But the 13th game shouldn't punish you. Let me give you a real quick example.
Sure.
Because this could happen with TCU. I think they're safe, but in 2014, TCU only played 12 games because they didn't have a Big 12 championship game. They went into the final week at 10-1. They were ranked 3rd in the country. They won. They defeated Iowa State 55-3 and went to 11-1. But they only played 11. They only played 12 games. Ohio State was ranked outside the top four, but they won the Big Ten championship game and won their 13th game. And as such, they moved TCU from 3 to 6, and Ohio State bumped TCU out. And the theory was, you didn't play a 13th game. Ohio State did. You're going to be punished because you only played 12 games. The Big 12 creates a championship game after that so that their teams always play a 13th game. This year, TCU is 12-0. They're ranked 3rd. Ohio State is 5th, and they do not play because they're not in the Big Ten championship game. So TCU could play on Saturday, lose, and get bounced out for you, Ohio State, this time because they had to play a 13th game.
Incredible, right?
So in an 8-year plan, they could get knocked out by the exact same team once for not playing and once for playing. That's college football. It makes no sense.
Right, exactly. If you're logical and you make an intellectual argument, it's going to be fine, but that's not what that is. Let me ask you then, to your point, what if TCU does lose in the Big 12 title game against a very good Kansas State team? Are they any better served, or are they in a better spot to withstand that loss than USC? In other words, could they lose and still be in?
Yeah, I think they can for two reasons. One, they have 12 victories, so they have one more victory than Ohio State. And they have two more than Alabama. And those two teams are stuck at 10 and 11. So you already have an extra victory. And Kansas State's ranked 10th. And if they lose that game, barring a total blowout, but let's say they lose by 5 points or 8 points or whatever, you've lost to a top 10 team at a neutral site, and that's your only loss. So I don't know how you would punish someone so much when they have an extra win. And again, you're now punishing a team for having to play an extra game, for earning an extra game. The benefit of the doubt should always be to the team that has to play that 13th game, not to the team that's sitting at home not risking anything.
talking to Dan Wetzel for another moment or so. So really quickly, Dan, what about the coaching carousel before I let you go? What's your reaction to Hugh Freeze getting that Auburn job? For instance, is this guy the best that they could do? And what is your reaction to that hiring?
Well, Deion Sanders is sitting there. So, I don't know. Is he the best they could do? No, probably not. But this is the guy they're comfortable with. They want to win. They believe he'll win. They don't really care about, you know, baggage or what he did or what he said to recruits or what, how he treated his players or NCAA rules or anything else. This is Auburn. They just want to win. They are hung up on winning. They will hire coaches, fire coaches. Even if you're a winning coach, you get fired. They're paying tens of millions in buyouts to all sorts of coaches. It's sort of the perfect marriage of a chaos program and a chaos coach, both of whom can self-inflict all sorts of harm on themselves, but also can carry to incredible heights. It's like kind of a perfect marriage. But, man, we'll see what happens with Deion Sanders. But you put Deion Sanders at Auburn, and he's going to have a top three recruiting class every year. And he's like the lottery ticket in the Southeast on I'll take my risk on, geez, will his coaching ability stand up moving from FCS to the SEC, or can he handle running a program this big? I'd never doubt Deion Sanders can do anything, but those are your questions. Or is he going to hang out with our boosters? No, he's not. But, man, he's going to attract the best players around. Like, there's no recruiter like Deion Sanders, and if you give me that chance. So I'll always wonder. We'll see what happens with Coach Prime. He's going to make a decision on Sunday, but that's where they went with Hugh Freeze, and we'll see what happens.
So, Dan, leave us with that thought. What do you think Coach Prime is going to do, and where do you think he should go?
Well, he's certainly not calling to ask my opinion, but I'll give it unsolicited.
I'm asking for it. I'd love to hear it.
I would tell him to go to South Florida. He has a Colorado offer. He may have a Cincinnati offer, and he has a – it's first of this whole thing's he's the best, right? He's completely unorthodox. Most of these coaches will not admit they're even thinking of going to another school, right?
Right.
And then they just ghost the program. It's like, oh, I'm out of here. Just leave. And you know, Deion's like, yeah, I got offered Colorado. I'll talk to him on Sunday. I'm good. I'm going to give it. I want him to come out with a table and have like three hats and do like, you know, do the signing day thing.
I'm so pissed. You took my line. I was going to say that to you. That's exactly what I want to see happen.
Do it. Jackson State. Am I staying? Am I going? And he can even fake it. It'll be great. I think South Florida, I know Colorado's a Pac-12 job, but he's from Fort Myers. He's a legend in Florida. Every kid in the South knows what he's been doing at Jackson State. There's so many players down there. He's so close to Atlanta. And the AAC it's not Power 5, but we don't really have Power 5 anymore. In 2 years, there's six leagues are going to get a shot at the playoff. You got an NFL stadium. You got this big, huge, diverse city and this big, diverse campus, and it's growing. Deion Sanders at South Florida is going to make waves. Deion Sanders wherever is going to make waves. But, man, Colorado is a long haul. It's also cold up there. And I don't know how much he likes, like, you know, cold. Like, he could be in Florida riding around in his golf cart, like, trick out a golf. I mean, it just fits down there. So I'd go to South Florida. But let me tell you what, he's going to do whatever the heck he wants, and it's probably going to work out.
Hey, why does anybody do anything? Because they can. So, Dan, are you going to roll out early in the morning tomorrow with your Bush Light and rock your USMNT gear? Are you feeling that? And is it too early to crack a beer, or is it never too early to crack a beer?
No, never too early. Probably not. Probably too early for me tomorrow. I got some other responsibilities. But I highly encourage all Americans tomorrow to start consuming as early as possible a good United States of American brewed beer.
He is Dan Wetzel. He is a columnist for Yahoo Sports. He is a New York Times bestselling author. Again, author of a great, great series you should check out, Epic Athletes. He is the EP of the Aaron Hernandez doc on Netflix, Killer Inside. You should also check that out. And part of a great podcast, the College Football Inquirer. My man, appreciate you very much, Dan. Thanks so much.
Thanks, Rome.
Appreciate you, dude. You're the best. I always say it about him. I think pound for pound, he is the best sports writer in America. I mean that. I think he's the rangiest. The guy literally can write the hell out of anything, any sport, any topic, the courts, politics, sports, any sports. He really is, to me, pound for pound, the best sports writer in America. And I've got profound respect for a lot of guys and a lot of journos. I just don't think that anybody has his range.